good morning. Is this live?
This is live. I promise. Okay. You know, I don't think I've ever done a show that's been recorded in my life. Everything I've done has been live. So this is, I wouldn't know it any other way.
Or live on tape.
No, live on tape. No. Just live. Throw the thing up.
And that's you.
Well, that's all
you
get.
That's
all it gets me.
Live. Live.
Yeah, I don't like reading stuff. I'm not very good at it. They call that acting. And if I wanted to be an actor, I'd go to acting school. Instead, I want to be a radio guy so I can talk about local issues affecting our town, our governments, our school corporations. And Keith, what's happening?
Well, Sue, I want to start off with the fact that politics is very interesting to me, and we talk about it a lot here on this radio station. But the governor, a year ago, turned down federal aid to have pre-K education for the state of Indiana. And now that he's running for re-election, he's all for pre-K.
Maybe he should run for re-election every year, Sue.
Well, yeah. How do you read that?
That's great, Mike. Well, you know, he turned it down saying that if he took federal money, then the feds were going to control what we did with pre-K education, and, you know, it wasn't a good expense of money. However, it's federal funds, so it's money that we've all paid into because it's federal, and it went to other states to educate other states' children. So he turned it down, but now he wants to re-explore getting federal money. So, the cynical side of me says, well, he's up for re-election. You know what? I want the money no matter what. I mean, if we can have money for pre-K, universal pre-K, fine. But it is very suspicious that he turned it down, and so we've lost all that time and all the time we could have been putting pre-K into effect. But,
so it's not just losing the time, Sue. It's those kids lost out on an opportunity.
The time for those kids, exactly. And every piece of research shows that pre-K benefits down the road with higher graduation rates, higher earnings, less problem with kids. So there's just no denying that pre-K is well worth the money spent.
Well, Indiana's got a long history in this because we used to have half-day kindergarten. Now we got full-day kindergarten. We've seen the results. We know what it means for that. And, you know, the earlier you can get started, the better off these kids are.
Right. Exactly. There's no question about it. And the statistics that show the number of kids from impoverished homes that benefit really is way beyond the expense. Something I just read recently said the return on investment is like $7 returned on $1 invested. So that's 7 to 1.
Well, you know, the other part of this is that even if we do get the federal funding to do it, it's not for the whole state, it's not for every kid, but any kid that gets the advantage of this is going to be better off for it.
Exactly. There's no question about it.
Now, you were at a big meeting last night of the ICPE. Tell people what that is.
Acronym alert.
Okay. The Indiana Coalition for Public Education.
Oh, that's not bad.
South Central chapter. They held a roundtable discussion last night on issues affecting public education. So there were six different discussion tables, and there were like between 65 and 70 folks there. So we talked about things like social justice and equity, A to F grading and testing, one of my favorite things, the referendum, vouchers and charters, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is a conservative lobbying group, and political action in the community. So you got a chance to talk about three different topics. And one of the things that just impressed me so much that it was such an intergenerational group. We had people there from their early to mid-20s up into the 70s and 80s. So we just had all kinds of people, teachers, retired teachers, parents, grandparents, IU folks. So it was pretty cool. And once again, this is the group that's working to support public education in Indiana, and especially right here.
Did they reach any conclusions?
Well, at each table that I attended, it really sounds like a lot of the issue is people aren't aware of what's going on in public education, which is why we do this slot on Thursday mornings. People don't have a lot of information. They hear really quick sound bites like public education is failing, and so they believe that. And that it goes back to our state legislature and that people need to be really involved at the state level. Somebody was talking about the fact that legislators don't get a lot of mail or contact about education, so that when they do, they really do pay attention to it because it's so different. So that was one of the things, you know, that comes out of a lot of different groups like this. We need to keep writing our legislators and telling them what it is we think we need in public education and what we want them to do.
There was a time, Sue, when a fair number of the legislators were teachers. My next-door neighbor was an active teacher who, during the legislature, got release time from the schools to go and be in the legislative process. Now, what better input are you going to get about education than from people that are doing it? So.
Right, exactly. And if they can't be elected to the legislature, then there needs to be a whole lot more contact and a lot more conversation with educators and people who know what they're talking about when it comes to education.
Now, the education is going to be up for, I don't want to say referendum on the next ballot, but the what does Glenda Rich do?
State Superintendent of Public Instruction.
Yes.
That's a race this time.
There is a race, right. And there are multiple challengers lining up.
A couple of people on the other side and then Glenda on her side.
And what is that going to tell us, if anything, Sue, come the 6th day of November or whatever that's going to be?
Well, I guess, again, that's going to tell us what direction people want to see the Superintendent of Public Instruction go. You know, 4 years ago, when she beat Tony Bennett, which was such a surprise to so many people, and what people thought he was doing to harm public education. And that was just a real grassroots effort. She didn't have a lot of slick advertising. It was really feet on the ground, going out and campaigning for her. So it'll be really interesting. But I will say, Glenda Ritz is going to be in town today from 4:30 to 6 at Fountain Square Mall.
Very nice.
Not Fountain Square Mall. Yeah, Fountain Square Mall downtown.
Let me ask you a question, because I have this thought when I talk to Marty Hawk on Wednesdays, and sometimes we talk about certain jobs and things like that. Like, for example, the auditor's job is a very important job because the tax money has to be collected, dispersed, done, well, you know what I'm talking
right.
about, all that
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Yes.
Does, and we've argued at some point, that maybe that should just be a political position. That just needs to be a financial position, not a political party thing. The superintendent of education, does that need to fall under that same umbrella? To a degree?
You mean appointed
well,
as opposed
yeah,
to elected?
Yeah, as appointed. Again, because you get someone pulling a lever that doesn't understand maybe what that little lever does or doesn't do, and then all of a sudden, oh, okay, whoever had the most go out. I don't know how that works.
Well,
so that's my
your
question.
Option is
education so important that you should have an educator in there that's appointed by other educators as opposed to...
Well, who are the other educators going to make the appointment?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm saying
see,
this is a system broken.
It's a political thing if it's an appointment.
Yes, and it's a ballot pulling thing that from people like mm-hmm. Sue just mentioned that doesn't maybe pay attention to all the issues. They just pay attention to the letter, and you get what you get.
Or we could do it the way that local school boards operate. Local school boards are elected. We could elect a state school board, and then that state school board could hire a superintendent like local
That's interesting.
School boards do. So yeah, I think more and more people are looking at some of these positions. And you're right. Do they need to be partisan? Do they need to be elected? Do they need to be appointed? And, you know, school board members run nonpartisan. We don't run with a political party. So
that's kind of the angle I was going at.
Yeah, that's
that.
What I thought. And so maybe we should look at that same thing. You're right, at the state level.
Interesting. Sue Wanzer and Keith Klein are our guests this morning. They both serve on the MCCSC school board. Well, what else is happening we need to pay attention
there's
to,
there's another political issue, Sue, and we need to talk about it because it's still in the news, and that is Todd Rokita bringing up legislation that would limit the amount of free and reduced lunches that are available to the children that need them.
How could that possibly help in an election year?
I don't know. Because... what he's saying is, and I don't know, it depends, I guess, who you're appealing to. He's saying this is going to save money, and it's money that could be used for breakfast programs or summer school lunch programs. However, everything that we've read, what's happening now is that if a school has 40% children classified as in need, the whole school gets lunches. What he wants to do is change it 60%, and instead of using federal means testing like who has food stamps, go back to the old system of where people had to apply for that, and then there was a long process of verifying. And everything we've read indicates that there's more money spent on that process than there is.
Sounds like more government. That's weird.
Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly.
More bureaucracy.
Which doesn't...
So right now, we have four schools that benefit from this, Arlington, Fairview, Templeton, and BGS. If we went to this new system, only Fairview would qualify for everyone getting free lunch, and everybody else wouldn't have to be applying for it. And we know...
And who guarantees that the kids that need it get applied for?
Well, that's a good problem. Point.
And that's part of the problem, is the outreach... to do that, some people may not want to apply because of the stigma attached to it. And then once people apply, then it has to come back through the school for verification, and then it has to go to the feds for verification. And it's just a whole lot of time and effort, which will cost more money. And we know that a lot of kids aren't getting proper nutrition or food. And those who are getting that through our free lunch program, it helps them learning. You know, no kid is able to sit in school and try to learn something if they're hungry. So that's really the bottom line.
Well, so we've got situations where we've got backpacks on Friday, where we're sending mm-hmm. food home with the kid so that the family has something to eat over the weekend. It's particularly interesting now because school's out. And some of these kids who were getting their meals primarily in the schools are going hungry. So, it's a mess.
The community kitchen is doing something about that. Does serve meals. But when you read about this, again, there's the rules and the process that they have to go through. They can't claim a federal reduction if the children take their little lunch and go away, like go to their apartment to eat it with their family. They have to sit the staff have to see them sit there and eat it in a 15-minute period. So there's all these regulations around, you know, some very, very good intentions and some good purposes of all we want to do is feed kids.
Sue, what's the good news? The good news is that our kids, in spite of everything, are coming out of high school tremendously prepared for what awaits them afterwards, whether they're going to college, whether they're going in the military, whether they're going into the workforce. Our kids are much more advantaged than they have been in years past.
Right, and we saw that a couple weeks ago at our commencement ceremony.
Right.
With our principals talking about, you know, the high level of graduation rates, the high level of kids seeking post-secondary education, and all the other kinds of things that our students get to do all the way from kindergarten through high school. So, yeah, I don't want to paint it as such a sour picture because in this community, and we know this community, we're really fortunate, we have some great opportunities for kids.
Well, referendum?
State. Right, you referendum. Will be
our graduation rate before the referendum that we're winding down now, getting ready to start a new one, was under 90%. Now we're in the 95 percentile.
Right.
That's just one of the issues.
Exactly. I was going to say, and a lot of people can say, well, you can't isolate that and say that's it. But in the last 6 years, we have a lot of data that shows improvement in a lot of areas.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, I've got to think one of those reasons is because we were able to add teachers after we had to cut them. So we know more teachers, lower class size, really benefits our students and all the other kinds of opportunities that we're able to offer to kids. So, yeah, and I think in a few weeks we're going to be considering a resolution for the referendum. The board will be considering the referendum.
Well, you know, all you got to do is look around. School systems all over the state are finding that the only way they can provide the level of education that the kids deserve is through referendums. And the story in today's paper, Indianapolis Star, front page, the Washington Township School Board unanimously approved referendums for their school system. It's all over the state.
Everybody wants a tax. Everybody wants a tax increase for more money, claims it's for a great cause.
Mm-hmm.
Local option income tax,
right.
Food and beverage tax. We wanted to do that. We'll line them all up for you. And they're all there, and they're all for great causes. There's a lot of them.
And I get that, Glass, and I get that. But part of the thing with education in this state is when we shifted from property taxes to state sales tax funding education.
I don't disagree with you.
Funding went down.
Yes.
It's not a stable source, and so the state keeps cutting, and then that means the community has to supplement what was cut. And in this community, we do have a lot of support. There's a lot of communities that cannot do that.
Has anybody answered the question of why that they thought it would be a good idea to change from property tax to sales tax?
I think because a lot of people have complained about, you know, property taxes being too high, or they didn't see a direct correlation, when there really is a direct correlation between the quality of your education and your property values. So, I don't have a really good answer for you, Glass, except that
it ain't going back the way it used to be. I know that.
Well, yeah, and the advantage we have going into all of this is that for us, it's a continuation of a tax that's already in place, and
again,
we never took the full amount that was allocated in the first place.
And it must be really fun to look down, up and down the city and county government saying, hey, guys, thanks for doing that this year. That really helps our cause, because everybody's got their hand out and everybody's got their hat out.
Yep.
I know. Doesn't this seem to be the year, you know?
Well, it's silly because, I mean, it's all about them, and it's all about what they want to do for their cause, and that's fine, but the general good here, I think, has been terribly lost in the shuffle. But, hey, if we got to cram this in before the end of the year, we got to cram it in before the end of the year, and everybody's getting it. And when it comes out of your check, that's real life, and people see that.
But at least we can say we are reducing the tax that has been charged.
Oh, I'm pointing out that you'll just have a harder fight on your hands because people have been bombarded with taxes and increases in the last 6 months, which is silly. These people can't wait till. If public education is important, if public education is so important, I don't know. That's not how I'd have done it, but they don't ask me.
And I agree with you. Water is important.
It is.
Public safety is important.
It is. But here's the deal. You got a brand new mayor in town with a brand new agenda, and your timing just didn't work out. You're getting hammered. You're getting hammered from all sides on this. And it's unfortunate because no one's going to say, you know what, good point. We'll turn down. We'll come back next year with this. Nope. Everybody races right to the front of the line, hit it while it's hot, and let's go. And that's tough. And I hope you hit it because I know how important it is.
And the thing is, with the referendum, that's a popular vote. That's on the ballot. The water rate increase goes through city council. The public safety LOIT tax goes through city and county and Ellisville councils. So this is the one place where people have direct input, and that's the one thing that concerns me, because if they're upset about
your collateral damage
going up,
they might not be mad at you. They might be mad at it.
Right. And that's it. And I think that's the issue. They're mad at taxes, and this is the one place where they can actually have a say in it, a direct say.
So your campaign for the next few months is you've got to deflect and divert and make sure you get those graduation rates out there and the 4 stars and everything else. That's a tough one, but it's a tough battle. It shouldn't be.
Go to the farmer's market every Saturday. We've got wonderful volunteers out there with information about the referendum, as well as a whole lot of other community organizations that folks are going to. So, again, it's yes4mccsc.org if people want to go online and get more information.
That's where you can find it all. Sue, great job as always. Appreciate your insights. Same to you, Keith, as well. We'll get caught up with you next Thursday.
Okie dokie.
Bye-bye. Sue Wanzer and Keith Klein both serve on the MCCSC school board. Thanks to J&S Locksmith. They're with us most Monday through Fridays here in the busy 8 to 8:30 half hour. J&S, where you find everything for the residential, commercial, outdoor technician. J&S Locksmith, 508 West 17th Street here in Bloomington. Race out. Race that front. Who's out there? Who's on the street corner first? Whose corner is it? Mm-hmm. The Sharks and Jets? Push them off the corner? We're a very giving community, Keith, but at some point, my goodness, a line stretches around the corner, does this, does that. It's very, very interesting.